This is tape four of the interview with John Pike. Can you talk about lawsuits that are going on now? Is there something special?
Well, just this summer, or in 1987, two major suits have been settled. So currently, we really are only engaged in a couple of fairly standard technical patent suits. The two major suits that I think you're referring to, one I can get into in a bit of detail, but was, I think, of less interest. It was out in New York and was really a damage suit involving a young man who caught rabies and tried to attach blame to Worf. And there were some very peculiar circumstances. The other one is one that we're very sensitive about and have negotiated a settlement, part of which was a court order, in effect binding both parties to confidentiality.
All right. That's all you can say about that then. Well, I've been sitting here asking questions about the few little things that I come across in files that raise, suggest questions, but I would like you to reflect upon your period here so far, what changes you've made, what have been the most difficult problems for you to deal with, what are the gratifications of the job?
I think organizationally, Worf is an almost unique entity in that the role of the board is different than I think is likely in almost any other, at least good-sized group. In some ways, it seemed to me to carry on the traditions of a small early stage foundation in that there traditionally was a great deal of direct personal involvement by the trustees, and that the line, the jurisdictional issues between the Worf staff and the board was never very well defined. It is not even to this day, but I think we've moved away from that earlier phase, and that most of the trustees are comfortable with more of a delegation of authority than was allowed in the past. But remnants of it exist. For example, directors and officers insurance is almost a must for any group. Certainly, we'd have trouble inducing members of the board to serve if we didn't have insurance. Yet we at the staff level are similarly exposed, are liable to personal suit. Worf is so peculiar in its organization that we are having great difficulty getting insurance to cover staff. The reason is that the normal corporate arrangement says that there are directors and there are officers, president, treasurer, that kind of person, and those are employees. And even if they aren't directors, they're officers at the bank. My 26-year-old daughter is a bank officer, a huge bank in California. But I'm not an officer of Worf, and no one else on the staff is, and so we're not insured. And the insurance company has trouble adjusting, understanding why they should cover us if we aren't even officers of this organization. Well, that's a kind of a current leftover symptom of the philosophy that prevailed here, and I'm sure reflected the very strong personalities, some of them you see on the walls here, people like George Haight and Tom Brittingham, who very much got in, rolled up their sleeves, and did things. in a way that the board doesn't do anymore. And I think Ed Rosten, my predecessor, had grown up with that older attitude, and it was moving away from that, but the move has continued and, if anything, accelerated. So probably operationally, or even philosophically, that's the biggest single change that's occurred. And I hope it also reflects some level of increased, if not increased, at least satisfactory professionalism at the staff level. That there are more of us now than there were, and that we've got most of the bases pretty well covered, and so there isn't a need to bring in a trustee because of his technical expertise, but more to bring in trustees who bring general corporate and business knowledge.
So you have got this insurance thing settled?
No, it is literally on my desk now, waiting to. We're talking to the lawyers about interpreting the policy and how we're going to get other people, any of us on the staff, covered.
Well, is there a possibility that the WARF board might set you up as fine titles for you?
Yes, that's clearly, we may be forced to that. It may be just that straightforward.
Mm. Have you discussed it with them?
No, haven't discussed it with any of them yet.
So it really
this has only surfaced now because the policy we had in the past did cover us, listed us as insureds with our various titles. But the new we changed carrier, and that's where the problems come up.
That is interesting.
And it's created. There are little mechanical problems that only an officer can sign certain kinds of documents. And we have to go searching for individuals and have always made sure there were a couple of Madison trustees who were also officers to be able to track them down and get things signed. And again, we've moved away from that largely, again, since Ed's day. Kind of backdoor route. We passed a resolution authorizing me to sign an enlisting a variety of documents, patent office applications, and various other documents.
How would it affect the board if they did decide to make you president of WARF?
I think it'd be totally psychological. They're used to having the people on the walls here carried the title of president, even though in any other corporate organization, right, they would have been chairman of the board.
Yeah.
And most charities, as I understand it, I'm currently chairman of the Meritor Hospital Board, and that's set up in a totally corporate way. The president is the chief executive officer, and he carries on the day-to-day activities that he's authorized to sign because he is, in fact, an officer. And except for honorary resolutions to retiring medical staff or something like that, I rarely sign documents. I think it would just be a psychological change that some of the, particularly older board members, would have a hard time accepting.
It wouldn't subtly begin to affect the relationships and the amount of power the board had in the long run.
I'm in a poor position to answer that very well, because some of them might think that it was intended to lead to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know if it really would or not, but I think more likely what's going to influence that is what we've seen already happening, and that is that there was almost a generational approach, and that those of a certain generation are used to and like the structure we've had, don't aspire to this, call it corporate model, whereas I suspect the newer members just don't have the attachment to the status quo.
So you expect they won't raise any objection to this?
Well, I think it would be a matter of timing. I would predict that in the years in the future, they're going to have to go to the conventional corporate structure. But whether we're going to be able to do it soon enough to solve our current insurance problem is not so clear. Or we may be able to find another way. And I've asked the lawyers to see if there isn't something we can do or resubmit the application to the insurance company and get them to try to understand what the true circumstances are.
But from your point of view, that's only a small part of it.
It's symptomatic of this relationship, and I think that's the biggest change, that relationship that's been evolving.
Did Ed Roston discuss this with you? Had he ever thought about it?
He had thought about it, and I think he gave it up as a lost cause. By the time I was here, at least, he was close enough to retirement that he basically said, that's the way it is, and the board doesn't want to change it. In terms of other accomplishments or changes that have occurred, I suppose the other one is basically numbers oriented. On the patent licensing side, they're now up in dollars, breaking levels that were attained many years ago. In real dollars, obviously, that's not the same. But they weathered the storm of the early 70s when they felt that disclosures were going to dry up because of federal funding and the government claim to patents. The new law that in fact provides a royalty-free license to the government has helped a lot, and so I think that whole effort in the foundation is on a good, solid basis. It's just, as I've said before, a difficult business, and it's not one that you can, in my judgment, count on for very reliable income. Although we've at least been able to keep it in the black, it's always producing some income. On the investment side, that too has been much more professionalized. When we have both capable internal staff, small, just three people, and some carefully selected outside managers who, as a group, they have varying periods of success, and not really failure, but let's say good years and so-so years, but that's much more professionalized and institutionalized
now
than it was before.
How did you go about achieving that?
It's been strictly evolution. Evolution, and the fact that I think, truthfully, as Ralph Johnson was quite in his late 70s when I came, and he was getting weary of carrying this responsibility. He was out of active full-time business, and there wasn't anyone else who particularly wanted to pick this up and carry it on as a project. So again, they saw that we either have to do it ourselves, or the more business-like way, try to put in place an organization that we can rely on and let them do it. And I think any fund up in the hundreds of millions of dollars is inevitably going to say that this isn't just the do-it-yourself kind of thing, that someone even as generous as his time as Ralph Johnson had been would be willing to carry on indefinitely. So it had to come.
Was this something the board had to vote on, agree to?
It really was something that we talked about in the year and a half that I was here while Ed was here. And the first key move was to start recruiting as Ed's retirement approached.
And
the decision
to
hire George Austin was taken soon after I became managing director. And it was not voted on in any sense that I think you mean it, but George did come and meet with the investment committee. they looked him over, if you will, before the final decision to hire him.
But how does it work out if you want to hire somebody? Do you have to go to the board and say, I'm going to need this much more money for the budget?
Currently.
Well, then or whenever.
Then it was very informal. There was no budget. In fact, Ed Rostin told me in no uncertain terms that it was impossible to have a budget. Particularly because of the uncertainty on the licensing side. But when Bill Beers was president of the foundation board, he said, forget that. We're going to have a budget. So we have a budget. And we do just what you described. It's prepared in April or March and approved at the spring meeting for the following fiscal year. And if we need a new patent lawyer, that is included at the time. We could, in the meantime, make some kind of an emergency adjustment. But I make it a point to try to stay on that budget, and certainly would not knowingly add a significant salary item without conferring with somebody. But if we had to act, I'm sure we could do it very quickly. I mean, it is nothing like the legislative process. The cash is here. It's just a matter of having somebody agree it's worth spending money on.
But you don't have to take it to the board and get everybody to say, yes, you may have a patent lawyer.
You mean other than in the budget? The budget is acted on by the full board.
Oh.
And it's only changes that get discussed. In other words, I wouldn't say that the rent that we pay on this building is going to go up by 3% next year or something. It would only be, normally it's numbers of people, new positions, and annual increments that get included. Mm-hmm. We're even pretty loose about capital items because we don't budget capital as such. All we do is budget the annual depreciation against the capital. So as we're now starting to talk about a new computer system, that won't have any significant impact on the budget because that'll be written off over 5 years. Hmm. And the five-year write-off of the new one probably will not be greatly different than the five-year write-off on the one we have now.
Suddenly found myself wondering if anybody in the university ever said, here you guys are sitting down in this wonderful building. Are you spending too much money, and should you be giving more of it to us? Does that ever happen?
No. Never in my presence. The first point I would make that I think Bob Bach sometimes loses sight of is that it's not the university's money, it's Worf's money. Uh-huh. And it is until a grant is approved.
Yeah.
Now, the limit on that is what the IRS says that we have to do. Hmm. And we have to pay out, it's not well defined, but somewhere around 85% of our earnings to the university. So there's no legal recourse as long as we meet that 85% test. And if somebody at the university is coming around saying you don't need another patent attorney, or whatever, new computer, I think they're also coming around saying we are quarreling with your management, your stewardship of this. And I don't know all the legal dimensions of how that might be ironed out, but I think it would be very hard for an outsider to claim that they had standing to take any specific legal action to force, let's say, a different budget. And I can't imagine our board, to a person, accepting the idea that that budget ought to be scrutinized, say, by a state legislature.
It's really remarkable that it hasn't happened, but I just remember. in a way, isn't it?
Well, it may go back to the question on the history. I mean, the more information you hand out, the more opportunity you give people to question things that they don't like.
Mm. Anyway, go on with your discussion of changes.
Well, in a very broad sense, that I would just leave it at that, that I think we've kind of professionalized and changed the relationship between the board and the staff. That the board is much more an oversight, supervisory organization, and the staff much more the implementation side of the WRF.
Marv Warple said that Ed Rosten began having staff other than himself go to board meetings, which was new.
Right.
For instance, Marv Warple would be able to go to board meetings and mm-hmm. give information about what he was mm-hmm. doing. And that was new.
Okay. It's probably a step in that same direction, although I would say that I thought almost forever Ed and his predecessor, Ward Ross, acted as a team. So those two were longtime participants in the board meetings.
Yeah, but the other people, other members of the staff didn't get to come. So.
Yeah, that was already in place when I joined, so that's not a change I'm sensitive to.
But I wondered if you'd done anything of that order. Well, what you say.
I think we've just carried it out a little further.
Yeah.
In other words, a typical meeting now involves a report by the patent licensing people. And we've got a man who joined us just last spring who was at the May meeting. I mean, it's just as green as he could be. The entire group comes and we try to involve them in some way in the presentation. The controller typically doesn't say much about it, but he's prepared all the financial statements and he comes and at least is available for any questions on the accounts. And then the investment people make their own presentations. If one of them is recommending a stock, he discusses that stock.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the same thing that Ed apparently started. More so. I guess just the last comment I'd make is I think WRF really, I know Ed was this way. I think people would agree I am, maybe to a fault, has been the opposite of the bureaucracy. We've really not attempted to grow. The question you asked about funding of the new staff position or piece of equipment. Measured by any standard that I know anything about, people, dollars, percent, it's a pretty small, tight organization. We just don't have room for specialists and a lot of little niches. And the licensing people are always telling me how many more staff they have at this school or that school. I don't think there's a lot of room to complain about the overall level of costs or effort. Costs are numbers, and I think that probably most people who have some connection with WRF recognize that. So that probably helps us to the extent that they understand. In fact, I've had inventors complain to me that we're understaffed. We ought to have more people because they can't get as prompt mm-hmm. attention or as much attention as they might like.
What do you think you wanted to get more staff?
Well, we added a new man this spring, and that's mm-hmm. a big change.
Mm-hmm.
You've spoken with Marv Warple. We've kept him on a day or so a week as a consultant. Bremer is due to retire next summer, and I'm hoping we'll be able to work out a similar arrangement with him to keep the experience that those two guys have developed. So to say we might have to add another person down the road, we kind of got a couple of halves there already that we're talking about. Again, we're small and we don't have this bureaucratic tendency, and I'm not rewarded by having more people, I mean, either financially or psychologically, having more people around, and I don't think anybody else is. I think we try to be honest with people when we recruit them about some of the peculiarities of the organization. If they want to be part of a large organization or part of building one, they ought not come here. And people we have, by and large, accept that.
Yes, it's probably not a place for somebody who wants to move up in management, because there wouldn't be any place to move.
That's
up
right.
Or,
yeah, people here tend to be specialists in some area, but willing to generalize from that. Mm-hmm. The most extreme example is somebody that I admire very much on that is our controller, Ken Spring. He's a CPA, worked in a public accounting firm for a couple of big organizations, and came to us probably at the age of about 50, or at least in his 50s. In addition to keeping all our records and preparing all the statements, Ken manages the building. So he's responsible for the complaints that these people who have it better than they have it anywhere else on campus still are able to lodge about the heat or the cooling in the summer or the maintenance of something or other. This caulking job that's going on outside is something Ken hired a consultant, contracted for, and has been overseeing, and there are just innumerable problems that come with that kind of stuff. He has no particular training in it, but he's been willing to be flexible and deal with it. He's also the property manager that has had to deal with some sales of property. We had a building in Rhinelander that Ken sold. He's in charge of those McCoy properties out there and all the fussing that we've gotten into on that, and yet here he is a CPA.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a hard act to follow, and when Ken retires, we're going to have trouble, but I hope we can find somebody who will be able to deal with that, and will be honest in saying that's what we got to have, because we aren't going to hire a separate property manager.
Yeah. Good. Well, what do you have any expectations in the next 10 years? Any fears?
Well, our expectations are always to keep doing what we're doing and doing it better. Again, that's often dollars, but I think we're also going to see a quality dimension that we think WHRF and its service can be helpful to the university in more than just dollars. We want the inventors, or those who want to be inventors, to think this is a good place for them to come, where they can get some useful help and useful interchange with industry. It's a link that can be helpful there, and even in the broad sense, the economic development side of that, although we're not particularly focused on Wisconsin companies. If the best company as a licensee is in Nevada, we'll go to Nevada.
We'll probably get criticized for that.
Yep, but again, that we don't see our function as one for just local development, but obviously there are lots of shades of gray in between, and we'll do what we can. I think we could hope to energize a few new efforts along the way, as we did with CETUS and currently with Project Phoenix. Those will be few and far between, but in the next 10 years, it'll be a disappointment if we don't have a few more of those. Mm-hmm. And obviously to keep the investment portfolio intact and maintaining the basic flow of it. Again, I think that illustrates the underlying point that there isn't much to be said about WHRF as an entity in its own right. It's what it's going to be doing for its ultimate beneficiary.
All right, well, I thank you very much for giving your time.
Well, thank you.